Hi, David.
Yeah,
Sorry about that.
we
I don't know
got
what
cut
happened
off
there.
just now. So my question to you is, when it comes to the way forward for the public servants, what do you see as the options? I know you say that your executive body needs to meet and determine what will happen from here, but from the leadership position, what are your options now? Because they seem, to some of us, they seem rather narrow.
David, the truth is that you were right when we said that when you said that once Parliament dissolved, it was difficult for our public servants to receive a salary increase because, of course, the government would have to go to Parliament to approve a supplementary for public servants if they're going to change the salaries of public servants. Now, the way forward, as you asked, would be, to my mind, and this is just one suggestion, before I meet with the executive, would be for us to prepare a manifesto, which we're in the process of doing. And that manifesto would outline clearly what the union's request or what the union is expecting the incoming government to give towards public servants. So that is just one suggestion that
So
I
you
could have.
basically have given up that fight, full stop,
On what? On public on
on the
salary
public
increases?
salary increases, yes.
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that, David. I don't know what you want to, what you want me to say that. I'm not saying that.
Well, I am not trying to put those words in your
I
mouth.
told
I'm
the
just trying
public
to
clearly.
clarify.
No, I told the public clearly, David. And I never mixed my words. I told the public clearly that we have to make sure that we got government to agree to a salary increase before Parliament dissolved. That is something that I said before. So the only thing that we can do now is to prepare something, to my mind, that would let the incoming government know what they need to fulfill once they
Well,
change the government.
you
And
know, once you go down
that is
that path.
something, and that, hold a second for me, David, and that is one suggestion that I would have. But as I said to you before, I am going to wait until I meet with executive and national council to hear what they have to say.
You know, once you go in that direction, you open up another area of exploration, which has to do with, and what is required of the average public servant in Barbados going forward, especially in light of where the country is today. Everybody accepts that this country's economic situation is serious. But there are so many concerns about how we as Barbadians are responding to this challenge. So from the point of view now of the public service, how do you see the National Union of Public Workers making a difference in trying to get the public servant to be far more responsive to Barbados's current situation?
Well, that is a conversation that we would have at the negotiating table.
At the negotiating table.
Pardon me?
At the negotiating table, that's negotiating with government.
Yes, that is something because you are make, you, I would have to first identify what the concerns of the government are. I mean, they have been exposed in public, but we would want to see the facts in relation to what the government's position
So
is.
you're preparing a
And
manifesto to put to the
here,
government
you
on
want.
it as it relates to public workers' pay, but
But
you
I
don't
want to be
feel
able
that there is any
David,
responsibility to develop a plan of action to put to government for
David,
discussion.
David, David, David,
Yes, please.
I want to answer your question in the way that I believe that I can answer.
I understand that, and I'm not asking you to answer it in any other way. But what I'm saying to you is that it seems to me as though, you know, the process must begin with the union itself identifying what it sees as the challenges. And yes, it must interface with government as well, but you must begin from a position of identifying the issues as you see them.
Yes, I can agree with you, but of course we would have to look to see what the current economic situation is. And that
And
is
you
what
don't
we
know that? You've been negotiating for
Yes, please,
salaries?
hold a second, David. Come on. Come on.
But you have been
See,
negotiating on behalf of public servants, so that means that you must know pretty well what the economic challenge is right now. The other part of that is the processes that are employed within the public service. That's a different matter altogether, but at least the economic situation you should know. So to tell me
David,
that you gotta go and find that out
David,
now.
come on. not, David, come on.
I'm not trying to be difficult with you, you know. I'm just trying to put to you what is reasonable.
I just want to reply, so just tell me.
Sure, please do. Please do.
Right. So, of course, we have an idea of what the economic situation is. It was on that premise that we would have faced our starting position of 23%. You asked me a question about the manifesto, and I'm just telling you what the manifesto should be built on, how it should be built on. So the manifesto has to look at the province's current economic situation. It has to look at what government is able to afford. It has to look at what public servants, the role that public servants can play in making sure that government is able to achieve its objectives and its goals. And it also has to look at how public servants can function as comfortably as possible in the public service while government is able to achieve its objectives and its goals. So there are a number of components that would have to be part of that manifesto. And as I told you, we have already started to develop that manifesto, and the manifesto would be available to all of the political parties for them to make their comments on whether or not they believe that what we're requesting is reasonable, or if they want to adjust the manifesto slightly or whatever.
And the independents too, including Natalie?
Everybody.
Because you left out the independents, so...
No, including Natalie and everybody. Everybody. So the manifesto is going to be available to everybody so that they can make their comments. But the union's position has to be clear. To whomever is going to take up the next administration, that we have outstanding matters that need to be resolved before we can start to discuss long-term and medium-term strategies.
Having regard to what I put to you earlier, which is the view which some may have that this represents a failure on the part of the NUPW, which you do not accept. But let's go with the flow that says there are some within your union who may have that view.
You know why you don't accept it? It's because you have to look at all of what the union would have been able to achieve over a period of time.
Okay, fair enough.
And we have been able to achieve much more things than we have not been able to achieve. And you have to look at the positive. I try not to focus on what we were not able to achieve and look at it and determine that we are weaker because of it. I think it is an error if you analyze a situation like that. You have to look and see what you have been able to do positively, and then gauge that against what you have not been able to achieve, and then make a judgment based on that.
Where does it leave your leadership of the union?
I believe my leadership personally.
Yes.
Well, I'm willing and ready to work with the executive and council and the general body. And of course, as president, I have to be guided by my membership. So for me, they would have to let me know whether or not they are comfortable with the type of leadership that I have been given so far. I don't like to judge myself, but from all indications, I think that they have suggested to me that I have been doing a pretty good job.
Would it be safe to say that when you were re-elected as president of the National Union of Public Workers, it would have been a fair expectation on the part of many of those who voted for you that you would have been able to bring home the bacon as far as this salary increase was concerned? Was it a fair expectation?
You're asking the question in a different way, and I think what they wanted us to do, and I'm talking about the executive rather than me, I think what they wanted the executive to do is to make sure that we created the environment for them in order for them to receive a salary increase. And I think that is what the executive did. I usually like to tell my members, David, that it is the role of the executive to persuade government to give public servants a salary increase, and it is the role of the membership, the general membership, to force government to give them a salary increase.
Okay. I'm going to leave you there for today. But yeah, mm-hmm. If we were in a different setting, I would have told you. You haven't answered my question. I know that, and the other people know that you haven't answered the question, but we will leave that for another day. Thank you very much. This is an interesting query that has been raised. The writer says, I would like to continue to educate the public on the wrongdoings of Sandals Hotels. Are you all for real? Where is the parking for your staff? Each day, Dover gaps are always completely blocked up, as over 1,000-plus employees have no more than 50 spots of designated parking and are forced to park alongside the road. Now it has begun to hurt their pockets because the Royal Barbados Police Force are issuing the Sandals staff and other hotel workers in Dover Gap tickets daily, knowing full well the situation at hand. Now, can someone explain how this is supposed to be fixed? Can someone explain why they haven't provided new designated parking for staff? Can someone explain why Sandals Hotel declined an offer to rent or lease the empty parking lot just down the street? This person, sir, says that this is wrong. The problem is that with the number of people that they have to employ in that area, I don't know how easy it is going to be to find parking. And there's got to be some recognition on the part of the police that something has to be worked out between them and Sandals on this, because under normal circumstances, any other employer, I believe, would have been expected to find the necessary parking spaces. But this is Sandals, and it's much bigger in scale. So I hope they can work out something there, because the alternative to that is perhaps get involved in a park and ride arrangement or something like that, you know. The scale is just not the norm. Down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air? Hello? This person says they hope that I don't allow anyone else to get away today. He was on a candy like white on rice. You see, the truth of the matter is there are times when people in decision-making positions, if they make themselves available.
Hello?
I mean, you can only ask what is the logical question. And you may recall that one of the early callers to this program did raise this whole question of how he saw the union functioning. It is in that context, therefore, that we had to raise some questions with Mr. McDowell to the notion that the government needs to be treated in a similar vein if they make themselves available. But as you all well know, they got some people who've been in government who don't believe that they got to report to the people in any way. So, you know, or their notion of how they report to the people, sorry, isn't that they don't believe they have to report. Their way of reporting to the people is different. So once given the opportunity, you do your job one way or the other. And it's as simple as that. I see it no other way. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
A blessed day to you, sir.
Yes, good afternoon.
I trust that your day is going beautifully well.
I think so.
Okay. Now, before I go on, let me say to you, you just mentioned the sound situation in parking.
Yes.
That problem has to go on the shoulders of Town Country Planning. In that, with a large project like that, current planning should have ensured that hotel had parking facilities, knowing the staff and the guests that may have to park their vehicles. So
by the time they finish Hyatt with the proposal that they have, people can come out here and take up our parking spots at StarCom.
All I'm saying to you is that Town Country Planning has a responsibility to ensure that these things are in place.
So, Dennis Johnson said all Nelson Street would become a parking spot.
But there you are. You see, because then, remember, the Sandals will not take advantage of that. But then, I'm saying to you from the outset, these things has got to go in the planning.
A big problem, though. I mean, to me, because of the large number of people who are employed by Sandals in that area, one might very well have to be looking more at a multi-story car park or something like that.
Right. All right. Let me go on to the other. I don't want to go there. I want to say here to you today that the citizens of Grenada and the citizens and people of Antigua
has rejected the oppositions who came against and said all the negative things that they would have against the government, and so showed not only their support, but their appreciation to those two governments that has kept all of the social services in place, has kept jobs in place, and has been able to keep their country above water.
And had a hurricane.
Wait a minute. During the turbulent times that we have encountered. And I'm saying to you.
And then letting elections go down the 90-day period.
But you want me to get that? And let me just go one step at a time.
And the Prime Minister used to talk to people.
Let me go one step at a time. You see, I'm going to show you. Now that you mentioned
you're
that.
You're looking for similarities. I just show you some differences.
All right, but let me just come into that now. I'm going to show you the ridiculous thing about that. Is that? Antigua just called election 15 months before.
And what's ridiculous about that?
But let me ask. No, I want you to tell me what was ridiculous about it.
You told me that it's ridiculous?
No, I tell you that just show that. And who... You see, look, we've got to be very careful.
The proof of the pie is in the eating. At the end of the day, you will have an opportunity to see whether the Antiguan Prime Minister's strategy, because it has worked for him in political terms, because he's gotten one additional seat. In the case of Barbados, we will wait to see how many more seats are won and how many seats are lost.
Right, you see.
Because at the end, remember this, in all of this, the people will have the final say. And all the things that we do and don't do are matters that are going to be there for public scrutiny and public approval or disapproval.
Now, let me show you this. Let me say this to you. Depends on who eyes are you looking through. And I find that there are persons, including you, who are looking through the most objective eyes that you can possibly find to throw at this government. And I have not heard you say it, and given kudos to the government for the strength, the wisdom that it has shown in not allowing itself to be bullied by anyone, including the unions in Barbados. The government has expressed and demonstrated its strength in standing up for what saw and believe and know was right.
That you know, it depends upon which side of the fence you are on.
But you
see, why I don't get into that is because I know that you see the union as a bully, but they got public workers who will see the government as a bully.
But they will see
the government as a bully, and they have articulated it in these terms. Remember the reduction in pay which the government ministers had, and then they gave it back to themselves. You remember that the government said that it was increasing NSRL with a view to making the situation better for the public servants. It has never delivered on that. And then, as somebody said this morning, in all the circumstances, government ministers still getting paid in the 90-day period, but they can't find money to pay the people. So there are differences in how people see the thing.
Let me ask you. You see, this is what I tell you about persons who choose to be critical of the government no matter what the government did. Let me say this. Let me ask you this. Have you heard either member of the opposition say that they are not going to take the 3 months salary or the 90 days salary that they are going to be paid? Have you heard either one of them say that?
No, I haven't heard them.
Thank you kindly.
But let me ask you,
let me show you,
are they the government of Barbados?
All right, let me show you the ones
that
didn't...
Are they the ones that... Let me ask you this question in real terms. Do you believe that out of the two sides, the government and the opposition, that the opposition carries more weight when it says we are going to make a sacrifice? It is not the government of the day. So it is not going to have the same weight. Mind you, I do take your point that it will have some influence nonetheless, but it does not carry the same weight.
Mr. Ellis.
So don't shift it to the opposition. Let's deal with the government first.
Well, let me deal with the government. Let me put this to you straight. I don't want no excuse from you. Has the government broken the law?
Listen to me.
I asked you a question.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. I began from the premise that this is not just about no law. There is legal authority and there is moral authority. There is a question. Let me just tell you, because you haven't heard what I had to say about this earlier, you know. It is not just about that. It is about leadership and being responsive to what the country is asking of you and being cognizant of the fact that even though you have the legal right to do something, there are occasions when people are asking something else of you that if you do not give it to them, you will pay a price and the country or the people will pay a price. Stop going down this line that it is only about the legality of it. I have not questioned the legality of it because that is the safest ground on which you can stand with this. But look at the other side of it, the moral authority. Have you lost that?
Ms. Ellis, don't we have people in this country who see morality, who place morality the way they want to see it? Is morality not a subjective thought of people?
Yes. It
Thank
is,
you very much.
But
Thank
I want you,
very you
to
much.
That is true, but I'm my part my point to you though is that leadership, political leadership, requires a degree of flexibility and responsiveness to what people are saying. And most of all, when you look at the economic situation facing this country, it becomes all the more urgent.
You know, sometimes I am amazed at things that I hear such as this. Now, you are talking about economic responsibility. And when the government has just introduced a tax to maintain jobs for the same persons and the kids' food on their tables, people like you criticizing it. I mean, you are really amazing, you know.
You know, the only thing that you can, in all fairness, the only thing you can say that I have done is to No, before you talk, though, you said that I criticize a tax. The only thing I have criticized is the persistent taxation and the extent to which that is taking us nowhere.
Who is the money being spent on?
Anyhow,
tell me that.
Proceed. I'm listening to you.
I'm going to ask you, who is the money being spent on? You want to hear that? I have a friend in England who calls me something 2-3 times a week. We go back for many, many years. She said to me, and I mentioned it to my wife, either in January or December, somewhere around there, that 770 police stations in England, she lives around the London area, the government has closed them down and has laid off officers because of the economic situation. Not only that, they have reduced welfare money that they've been paying people. She is a person who has a parking ticket that when she grows up, she wouldn't have to pay when she parks.
So what I got to do with us?
But let me get to it. I am telling you, I'm pointing out something to you.
What is it?
That is, in addition to taking away that parking ticket, they took away one of her checks that she gets.
That is to say what?
And that is to say that our government today, and I challenge you or any person who are speaking like you, to tell me a single welfare person in Barbados who has been disadvantaged and taken off.
Look,
some welfare.
I think that selective approach to trying to let me finish, but
you're not letting me finish either.
I thought you were asking me a question, and I was seeking to respond to it.
I beg your pardon. Go ahead. You respond.
My position is that selective way in which you are pulling one piece of information out does not give us or put us in any strong position to make proper comparisons, because there are so many other areas that come up when you make that comparison. We may come up short, or they may come up short. The fact of the matter is that we have to deal with Barbados as we have seen it develop over the years. We know that we have certain challenges that we have to take. It is not business as usual. You're looking for decisive steps and stuff like that. Basically, you know, we can make an assessment of Barbados without having to go out and pull one fact out of the Botswana, one fact out of Nigeria, one fact out of Britain. Give me a break. You can't do it like that.
This is why you can't do it. This is why I'm showing you that this government has shown a human face to our society.
Man. Let me say to you that it isn't that I'm going to deny that the government has made an attempt to show a human face. I'm not denying that at all. But what I'm saying to you is that I've been around long enough to hear the same kind of approach used in Jamaica and in Guyana years ago, in particular in those countries, where the governments of the day said that they were democratic socialist governments and that they had no choice but to defend the jobs and the poor people. But you know what? If you go too far for too long in trying to do it this way, you are going to injure the very poor people for a long time. That's the issue. That's the concern. Short-term thing that you and are espousing about holding on to this and that, fine, you can do it for now. But you're looking at the trend, and you can see that that trend is dangerous. How are we going to fix this issue with the foreign reserves? Tell me.
Ms. Ellis, our country has always lived on borrowing, foreign exchange.
How are we going to fix the current foreign reserves crisis?
We will continue to borrow. That's what we'll do. Continue.
From whom?
To do it.
How is it that the government decides that it is going to put the elections back for the additional 90 days, but does not recognize that we cannot continue like this?
Ms. Ellis, I want you to know that decision making is done by an individual who measures, analyzes, and make the appropriate decisions as they see fit. Not any, and everybody making it. And you live, and you have responsibility for a family. And you are the head of your family who will listen to your wife and who will. But the ultimate decision rests with you. Because then you know very well that you cannot make a decision to please everybody. And if you do that, you are not your own man. Then you know what will happen? They will say, man, you just like a fowl that have no head. You're spinning all around a circle. Of course, this is how the opposition is now. Just spinning around because then they don't know where they're going to land. See? So I'm saying to you that a decision is going to be made and within the law. And I'm saying to you that because of the strength that the government has shown in not allowing itself to be bullied, and I'm going to show you why they not allow itself to be bullied. You remember carefully when the primary school teacher under Mr. Pedro Shepherd, I think that's his name, called out the primary school workers, teachers. He said, we are not on strike, nor we are not sick. But yet, they are in the park showing placards. And when they hear that, Mr. Jones was outside watching, start ducking about. And not only that, Mr. Shepherd said, we have to get pay. Not a cent they have not received. And you remember also sanitation workers who went and blocked sanitation place up there, thought that they could hold the country to ransom. And the minister, Mr. Lowe, brought out other people to take out the garbage. And they said they want, he said, not a cent. Shows you the strength of the government that refuses to be bullied by people who, although the country is in an economic bind, want to sink our country further. And the government said, no, the people are going to reward and see the government for its strength and for its tenaciousness to stand up against bullying. And you know very well that bullying is very prevalent in our society. And look and see what it's doing to people. And if you don't stand up against bullying, you will be nobody.
So you're essentially saying that the public servants were the bullies and the government stood up against
the
them.
The unions. Ms. Ellis, you would agree with me that unions tried everything it could to bully the government. to the point there, in the last strike, that they called the people refused to come out and notice them because the people understood that the government, the country could not.
So when you say you can dock the pay, that wasn't bullying?
Mr. Ellis,
when you said to them that if you go out, your pay would be docked, that wasn't bullying?
You ain't hear one of them tell the government that they got to pay them. They say they're not striking, or they may say, but they're still striking. And you don't remember one guy said to the minister, meet with me by Wednesday. Or remember all that? You got convenient memory, and I am saying to you that this government has stood up manfully on behalf of the country, not because they could put something in their pocket. And I'll tell you this.
You know, the proof of that would have been in... Let me tell you, you talk a lot, but you know where the real proof of that would have rested? If they had been able to show that they maintained their sacrifice. But far from showing that, they have shown to the people that they have gained. That is where the political challenge lies for them in the argument that you are presenting. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't see that.
You're
talking about government?
Yes.
And what behalf are you speaking?
Well, I'm talking about taking back the pay that they had surrendered. Talking about the argument that has been raised here about all the money that they're getting in this 90-day period, letting the parliament dissolve without an election date, and then for 90 years. That's what you gonna respond to?
Now, that's a red herring.
A red herring. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, it's a political red herring, and you know it.
Me? I tell you that, I only put it to you because, to me, it makes sense as an issue for people to put it that way. But you say you treat it as a political red herring, so be it. Let's move on. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. Well, that last caller, was he that a campaign speech or the gospel according to his party? But that's not what I call about. Early on in the program, I heard you made some queries. But I asked myself, from whence will these answers come and who will bring the answers? And it will... went over my mind, and I can't figure out where it's coming from. I just cannot figure out where these answers are coming from. But I know, I can say for sure, that we are the most complacent, laid-back, take-that nation in the whole world.
You really think so? I think that people keep a lot of stuff to themselves, but I don't think that you can interpret it as being all that laid-back. In many instances, there are things that happen and people are very worried about them. And people also say, you know what, let me bide my time. Time is longer than twine. My turn will come. You know, people in Barbados, at the end of it all, they really do have the country's interests at heart. And you recognize that in trying to respond to a problem, you got to be careful that you don't go and exacerbate that problem by the response that you give. So it sometimes is misinterpreted to suggest that people are indeed laid back and are not concerned. In many instances, Barbadians are concerned. I hear a lot of this discussion around this place, and I don't think that people are as laid back as you think. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Mr. Ellis.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Not as good as you, but I'm trying to be fighting. But I don't get much. They don't let me talk too much foolishness, so they don't let me talk when they call in program too long.
Well, you ain't got a lot of time today, so time is not on your side, so let's move on.
I heard you talking, or somebody calling, talking about the standards with all the cars parking in St. Lawrence Gap.
Yes.
The workers ain't got nowhere to park. But I wonder if the person they looked at as success. Because most of the people that work at hotels now, almost everybody has a car.
Well, they weren't trying to make a determination as to whether they were successful or not. The person was saying, look, we have no place to park the car, and as a result, the police reporting us, and it is hitting us in our pockets.
I don't agree with that, because the same thing with Kensington.
You don't agree with what?
Reporting people parking in the road.
The police following the law, I suppose.
But let me show you something. Before they had sidewalks, like they got now, people were parking alongside the road when the road was small roads. Now you got the highway, you got Spring Garden Highway and things like that. I from Westbury Road, I can tell you this now. You can't go down Spring Garden and see three people walking on that highway on the sidewalks. But yet still telling people they can't block the sidewalks. We want people to park somewhere that somebody can break in the car.
Kensington Oval is a place that people go to occasionally. The people at Sandals go to work every day. So that's why it is a bigger problem.
But this is Little Barbados. What part you can put in the sea? Put a car park over the sea? I mean, there's no way it's in Lawrence County.
Look, let me say this to you. When other hotels are being built, the Town and Country Planning Department takes into consideration issues such as parking. Now, what has happened with Sandals is that it is so big, and the area in which it has been established is such that it is very difficult to accommodate the hotel and its expansion, while at the same time taking into consideration the kind of parking that it requires. So there's got to be, people have to put their heads together and try to find some way around it.
Mr. Ellis, in Broad Street.
I don't need to talk about Broad Street.
No, I'm talking about parking.
I ain't talking about parking anywhere else.
Park in Broad Street.
I am not talking about parking anywhere else. I'm talking about parking up there in Dover.
Up at Dover. After dark and McBride, people park alongside the road.
Would you accept that it would be a much bigger problem up there now?
Where?
Up in Dover. Would you accept that with so many people employed there, it would be a problem?
It's getting bigger. All right.
Let me take another call before we go. All right, thanks. One more call before we go. Hello?
Mr. Ellis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Is there a discrimination in age to get a job in Barbados?
Yes.
Tell me.
It is well accepted in this country that once you hit a certain age, people don't want to employ you. And if you're a female, it's even worse. Don't you understand that?
I'm aware of that now. I went to the Labor Bureau to apply for a job to go to Canada. And the young lady just look at me and tell me I'm too old. I said, old? Do I look feeble or I have a disability? So I look around at everybody to see if there were old people there. I saw somebody that I know and they're over 50. In the late 50s. So I am saying...
She didn't ask you how come you're coming for the job with a Guyanese accent?
No, she didn't ask me that.
You're lucky she didn't ask you that.
She told me that she thought that I was coming and inquiring for a job for my grandchild. And I started to laugh. And I said, do I look old? She said, no, but I don't know that you could work. And she asked me, could you work? I said, do something look wrong with me that I can't work?
That's what kind of age? What's your age?
My age is 58. I'm going to be 59 in June.
58. So, you know, in that kind of scenario, are you surprised that they're not going to opt instead for a younger person to send to that kind of job?
I know young people don't want the job.
Well, I don't know that you could find a situation like that where it's difficult to find young people to go abroad to do that kind of job. On what basis do you come to that conclusion? That young people don't want to do that kind of job?
A lot of young people are not going for that job.
How you know that?
I hear
you check their statistics. But what you hear on the everything that you hear on the road isn't correct.
It's not correct.
Everything you hear on the road isn't correct.
The majority of times when you hear things, people say things on the road, especially young people, it does be true.
It would be very difficult for anybody to tell you that in the circumstances, they would give you the job ahead of a younger person. That's not going to happen. I'm going to talk about age discrimination. I don't even go as far as your age. I know that people up in their 45 and 50 have real problems finding a job because of the age. But in your case, that is even older, and you're going to have to come to terms with that reality for that kind of job. Okay. Anyhow, I think that's where we're going to have to wrap up today's edition of the program. Thanks to you, and thanks to Dennis Johnson. And also, I think we had Daddy Biggs assisted us with the telephone calls today. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon.